talk rugby league instead.
Let's talk rugby league, Roy! It's as simple as buggery and twice as attractive.
Well, maybe it was all that cocaine that was making people attractive.
Well, I don't know. They bust everyone for cocaine and immediately they decided that city country wasn't a good idea. I mean, the only reason they had city country clearly was to get all the city guys out into the country so they could fucking detox in Mudgee. I'm actually quite sad about the loss of... Because I think city country exists in the same space that the Origin exists, and it's the same space that Trans-Tasman International Rugby League exists. Mm. It exists for the benefit of the, if you like, the minor partner. Now, by this stage, Queensland Origin isn't really the minor partner, but the whole branding of Queensland Origin is that they're the minor partner. City Country existed for country. State of Origin exists for Queensland. Trans-Tasman Rugby League exists for New Zealand. If they didn't care as much as they do, then the whole thing would just go to hell. And unfortunately, the city country thing has been a casualty of the fact that even that wasn't enough to keep the joint afloat.
So the thing that I sort of got a bit hype, I don't know, fired up about was I've been banging on for ages, at least with Origin Week, you know, to take Origin to the weekend and play Fiji versus Papua New Guinea or Samoa versus New Zealand Maori, or, you know, like play some other international games around the sort of main the main game. And they've done
kind
that.
Kind of like they developed with the City Country Anzac Test weekend.
Yeah, and they've done that this weekend. Like they actually had, and I actually think it's a really good feel-good story, you know, all these islander nations and, like, at least on Facebook, I saw all the, you know, the group prayer and the haka and all this. It was being, everyone was sharing the shit out of it. So you have this really great feel-good weekend. And then these two guys get busted for recreational drugs. Now, four.
Are we up to four? Because there's a couple of New Zealanders. Four. There's the CEO of one other.
Yeah. Cronulla's CEO.
There's a fucking surprise.
That's the thing. Like, there was
imagine
more,
testing the wastewater in that ringing, electorate.
There was more wringing of the hands about the recreational drug use of a CEO than there was about the actual fucking performance enhanced illegal drug. Like, that sort of just didn't really. But anyway, so they make this massive story about it, and the two New Zealand guys get sacked from the World Cup squad, and what's her name gets sacked from the Gold Coast captaincy, and it's like, yeah, but I would lay a fairly large bet that in that Australian-New Zealand game, 85% of those players have sampled recreational drugs, and I reckon I would be on the low side.
And New Zealand played like they were on them at the time, and generally you've needed to be on them to watch international football for the past little while. No, I mean, that's not even the point. I mean, forget the players. What about the fucking audience? How about the broadcasters? How about the TV executives who are buying the product? How about all that's the fucking hypocrisy of this crack of this, and this gets to your government's fucking crackdown on people on welfare wanting to piss test them or test the fucking sewage that comes out their house. It's the fucking it's a massive hypocrisy that the rich people can do whatever the fuck they want.
Mm.
It's like, well, why do we only care about the rugby league players? What about the Ray Hadley? He's clearly on something.
Yeah. Well, you'd Viagra. Because otherwise it doesn't explain very much.
Beta blockers and Viagra.
I said the same thing. Like, why hasn't a newspaper gone and swabbed all the parliamentary toilets? And
oh, no, they did that. Do you remember, was it BuzzFeed or one of those places? No, what they did, they took a sniffer dog into the fucking Walkleys or something, or the Logans, and basically became pariahs in their own industry.
Yeah.
So that was like, it was like the kid who dobs to miss every time some kid farts or picks his nose in class.
Well, it'd be like that, you know, the Daily Telegraph would have been writing thundering articles about, you know, these bloody international players on recreational drugs, probably while they were sniffing cocaine off a hooker's tits. Like,
the way they write, I mean, they're clearly on.
I just can't believe that it's like everyone buys into the lie. That's what I can't understand. Like, and I said to Ryan about it, like, the players should have just gone up to New Zealand Rugby League and gone, well, if you're going to sack these two guys, then you've got to sack all of these other guys. But they're not going to, because it's their career and it's their earning potential.
Well, but I don't know. When it becomes rep footy, it's a little bit questionable, because that's not actually their employer. It's somebody they turn out for, you know, a couple of times a year. So it's kind of weird. It's a weird honorary thing.
Like I remember when Saylor got done by the rugby, and it was like, you know, all the rugby journalists wringing their hands about the wicked rugby league player, you know, bringing bad habits into the sport. And it's like, you've got to be fucking kidding me.
Cockheads. Peter Fitzsimon's fucking flogging on about, bring it in tight, boys. Keep the leagueies out. It's like, go and fuck yourself, you dreadful bandana-wearing cockhead.
Yeah, I guarantee you Wendell Saylor's dealer came from a private school, that's for sure.
Oh, fuck yeah, yes.
and probably played first 15 rugby. But
it's entirely probable. Or was an Olympic swimmer. There seemed to be a little
correlation there.
A little seam of that sort of shit going on.
Hmm. So anyway, that's my little rant about rugby league. But I just thought it just destroyed – I actually thought it was a really feel-good weekend. And it was a way to, like, for rugby league to really spread its wings a little bit and not feel so provincially Sydney and a couple of spots of Queensland, you know? Because Islanders really dominate rugby league now, and we should be making a much bigger thing.
But primarily the homegrown Islanders, in that they're Sydney or Western Brisbane.
Yeah, yeah. But all of those guys are very, very, like, I play a lot of touch with that same demographic, and all of them might have been born and raised here, but have a very, very, very strong bond to the mother country, whatever the mother country is.
Yeah. The only people who have this kind of black and white idea about nationality and nationhood and identity are people who've never left their own country.
Mm.
People who have gone to another country or grown up somewhere else with parents from somewhere else. You can have a fluid sense of nationality. You can feel like you're under multiple flags. And there's no reason why those kids, you know, you can't be a New South Wales rep and a fucking Tonga rep at the same time. And the sooner International Rugby League moves to enable that to be a thing that you can do, the better off international football will be. It's a real shame that this is the last Anzac weekend / city country / Festival of Island football. And I'm not sure what happens to those games.
So what are that? They're not doing that next year. They're not doing
the Anzac Test or the City Country. Oh. And that means that carnival of, because that's gone on for a couple of years now. It's built up from like one game to two games.
Yeah, yeah.
A series of games, and they were all out at Campbelltown, you know, which is that part of Western Sydney's a strong area for Islander communities who. I wouldn't say expat Islander communities, you know, migrant Islander communities at that part of Sydney.
Mm.
But that's, I don't know what happens to those games now, because they were kind of an add-on to they were kind of a thing to do on the Saturday in between the Anzac Test and the City Country, and that's gone now.
Yeah. Oh, that's a shame. So.
But I guarantee the Broncos will be on a Friday night.
Yeah. Well, whatever rates for Channel 9, I guess. I'm not going to watch it. We record on Friday nights for a reason.
Also, you could just put a tape on of the Broncos from 2003.
Yeah, that's all right.
Exactly the fucking same.
Well, speaking of it, just to switch into my sport, because I know how much you love playing, talking about touch football.
I thought you were going to say, speaking of exactly the fucking same, we're going to talk about the blowouts in the NBA playoffs, but we'll get to that
in a second. Well, yeah, we'll get to that pretty quickly. But I just wanted to mention that Japan beat New Zealand. So Australian Touch have been trying to build up the other nations in touch football. I think they realise that Australia, New Zealand in World Cup finals in every division all the time is not a good thing. So they put a lot of work into Japan. I don't know why they picked Japan, but they've got a couple of ex-Australian captains coaching the men's and the women's. They're sending, you know, lots of coaches over there to coach, you know, run coaching clinics. And Japan's
win. Do you think they're attempting a takeover of Japanese rugby by stealth?
Possibly. possibly. But it's very interesting. I watched the highlights of the games, and they look like proper touch teams now, whereas a couple of years ago they looked like social teams trying to play rep footy. And they beat the New Zealand Women's Open. So that the way they run the Trans-Tasman for touch football is now is they have these two warm-up games. So Australia and New Zealand play the Japanese sides twice before the actual Trans-Tasman. And they're still full tests, but, you know, they're classed as warm-up games. But they beat the New Zealand Women's Open in a drop-off. And that's just a huge thing because it's just never happened before. The only teams to ever beat Australia and New Zealand in touch are Australia and New Zealand. No one else has ever won a game in the Opens. I'm just so happy that it's breaking that homogeny of the same thing open just a little bit, you know. And that sort of thing gives a sniff to the other programs that are running in Europe, like Scotland and England and Ireland, where they're recruiting ex-Australian coaches and players to come and be involved to try and build them up. So
I'd be more worried about the opposite thing, which is, I mean, we've talked before about how New Zealand is slowly backing away from touch rugby because it's owned by the rugby league and the rugby union doesn't want to have anything to do with it. It might just be Australia and a whole bunch of minnows pretty soon, particularly in the women's side of the game where there's more professional players, then the draw is to pull them into the. That would be my immediate, because of course we've heard nothing about it up here. So obviously
even with the rugby league backing, it's only the only reason it's all over my Facebook and Twitter feeds is because I follow a lot of people who are involved, and one of my mates is playing in the mix for the first time, but. The other interesting tidbit in the international side of it was the USA Rugby Sevens program took over the USA Touch Association this week. So I found that pretty interesting because, you know, there is such a strong tie between the league and the touch football, but it was the Rugby Sevens program in the US that took over touch football because obviously...
Which makes sense because that's their best opportunity to perform on the international stage because they get a game every other week for half a year, whereas the rugby union get to play a bunch of C internationals and then try to qualify for the World Cup.
Yeah,
and the US rugby league is non-existent.
That's right.
I know it exists, the Tomahawks, but they're not particularly high profile.
No, whereas their sevens side makes semi-finals and finals in the sevens fairly regularly. So
all you need is 10 decent athletes.
Yeah.
And you've got a competitive seven side.
Well, I noticed
the barrier to participate is much lower.
I don't know if you saw this, but the AFL ran a whole heap of combines in the USA recently.
Geez, a combine's an interesting thing too. I saw about 2 minutes of the NBA draft combine and I was bored to tears. It was fucking boring as fuck. Fuck, and I don't understand why Americans are so obsessed with draft combines.
I can sort of understand the NFL one because it's all about that. It's a little bit about gambling, isn't it? You know, what speed can they do in that 40-meter sprint test? And
I don't think gambling that as much. I think it's more about everyone wants to be a pretend GM because everyone plays fantasy football. I think it's that kind of mentality that everyone wants to be instead of being a armchair quarterback, they're an armchair GM and they want to know all that crap.
So the AFL basically got together all the college basketball players that didn't make the NBA or the D-League and said, look, would you like to play for some professional football?
As many of them as would answer
that. Pretty much just put the call out. Hey, would you like to become a ruckman? I just find, look, you know, the interesting thing is they've only got to get two or three, and it's a great PR. Like, it's a great little PR thing to have a cup. I think it is, yeah.
Is it? Because it won't make any impact in America. But what it will do is piss off a whole lot of country Victorian kids who lose their job to some seppo, particularly some coloured seppo.
Yeah, possibly.
These foreigners, come on. You know what the atmosphere is like in Australia. black people coming over and taking the jobs of migrants coming over and taking the jobs of country Australians. Do you really think that's going to fly very well?
Well, I'll end up playing for Sydney or Brisbane anyway, so.
That's true, because the Victorians get homesick when they travel.
Yeah, that's right. They just go
10 miles out of Melbourne.
I always find that and the rugby league trade, you know, that we've got to have a 6-month trade window.
Mid-year trade window is fucking insane. It makes no sense at all.
Oh no, it's not the mid-year trade window. It's the the negotiating contracts 9 months, 10 months out from.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean the mid-year contract signing bullshit.
Yeah, and it's like NBA players can get traded, pack up, get on a plane, fly somewhere, do a medical, and play for their next team a day and a half, literally a day and a half later, with no problems at all. And in many cases have had very, very good performances for their new teams within a short period of time. But, rugby league players, they need 9 months to move and find a house, and sometimes they're moving from Campbelltown to Penrith.
I think that's bogus. I think that's probably more, it's more about that's more of a fucking a club books issue. In terms of where they've got the deadline, I think that's what you're describing is some post hoc bullshit that they've tacked onto it to try and justify it. When in reality, it's for the sake of the club front office people, because then they can get their books in order well in advance and know what their cap's going to be. But the AFL players who get homesick because they're in the same country that speaks the same language and has most of the same food in every fucking supermarket. Oh wow! Instead of Safeway, it's called Woolworths. I have no fucking time for, and they're always fucking Victorian kids who get homesick when they're in Brisbane. It's like,
but the thing is,
you're a professional fucking footballer. I moved countries for my job,
and you play in Melbourne probably
every week.
It's a 22-week season, and you probably play in Melbourne 8 weeks of the season,
and you can go home for summer.
That's right.
It'll be okay. You'll see your mummy again.
Oh
Jesus,
my God.
Fuck me in the ear.
it's just amazing. It really is. It is just absolutely amazing. And yet it's like, you know, even when the Lions were at their super professional best, you know, they were miles ahead of everybody else in the league. They still had that problem that they could not fight. You know, they would offer a guy more, and they would just go home. And that's when it wasn't like Brisbane were losing. They fucking won three in a row and made four grand finals in a row. They were a dynasty team, and yet they couldn't keep hold of guys. You know, Hedlund went back.
These kids had been coddled ever since they'd got out the womb. You know, they'd been in special bloody programs and coached within an inch of their lives, and they'd never actually had to stand on their own two feet as human beings, not as footballers, but as, you know, humans who have to go out and explore the world, and change is terrifying.
Well, this sort of leads me to the Spurs Rocket series, right? Because I was thinking today about
this should be good, folks. Watch for the dismount on this one. The degree of difficulty is quite high.
Watch for the lethal
logic. Stoney Judge is a real prick with the marks too. Let's see how those worked out.
I mean, we know how harsh you are. No, I was thinking about the resilience of guys like Simmons and Green that had been in the D League and you know, had kicked around and basically.
This is the other Danny Green, not the punching in the head merchant who's a good mate of Anthony Mundine's.
Mundine.
Danny Green of the Spurs and Jonathan Simmons of the Spurs, who is a D League reclamation project who has turned out to. Some people were tweeting, I want to change my MVP vote for the year to Jonathan Simmons based on this game.
But what I was thinking about, like that.
Regular season
vote. It's a regular season vote. But I was thinking about that game today, right, where those guys sort of, you know, just work their asses off. I don't think they out-talented the Rockets. I just think they work their asses off. I think the Rockets quit to a fair degree.
I think somebody out-talented them, and it was the dude with the dodgy comb over and the bad beard on the sidelines. So, folks, in case you missed it, because Bezo's not good at this stuff, the Rockets and the Spurs were locked up at 2-2 a couple of days ago in their playoff series, and that was all to play for, except for the fact that the Rockets haven't won a series locked up at 2-all since 1995 when Hakeem Olajuwon was playing for them.
I did not know that stat.
They've been at 2-all five times, including 1995, and they've lost the last four. Meanwhile, Pop going into a game five at 2-all was 12-5 and he's now 13-5 all time. And this was despite losing Kawhi late in game five, and also despite wearing the worst brown suit I've ever seen, paired with some kind of fuck awful teal green tie with white spots on it.
So that maybe it was a Craig Sager tribute.
I think even Sager would have been doing the Kevin Garnett, you need to take all this and burn it. Even the shoes.
But that's what I'm talking about with Simmons. Oh,
sorry, just to finish that, because there'll be an audience who aren't across this. So the Rockets lost game five in overtime, and that basically broke their spirit. And they got absolutely towed in game six today. They've lost the series, and they can all go home. And it's been quite embarrassing. James Harden was appalling today. He scored no points at all, and may God have mercy on his soul. Actually,
you're missing one key point, and that is the Spurs all year have basically been one superstar player and a collection of spare parts, and one guy that was supposed to be a superstar player but looked like he was over the hill. And that superstar player had an ankle injury and didn't play in today's game, and the Rockets should have won by about 40 fucking points.
Except they were broken, and Pop worked them out. And that's the problem with D'Antoni's sides. Your boy, he's real good at coaching his way of basketball, but eventually the Spurs just kept adjusting and kept adjusting, and they figured him out. They went from losing by 30 in the first game, no, it wasn't 30, to winning by 30 in the final game, and that problem was solved. That Rubik's Cube lies on the floor of the arena with all the colours all matched up.
He, there's absolutely no doubt he is probably the best ever sort of finals adjustment style coach going around.
Because I mean, there was a lot of talk about how Harden looked tired. I mean, everyone looked fucking tired, but it was more that Harden was playing fuck awful Kobe 20th season ISO ball. And the reason he was doing that because none of his dudes were getting open for the spot up threes that had been the bread and butter of the Houston offense for the entire regular season. I mean, they took a record number of threes all season. That dropped off dramatically in the last two games.
Yeah.
And they were trying to take threes off the bounce that were no shot at all. So all this glorious efficiency, all those efficient shots that Daryl Morey had preached and D'Antoni had coached, all disappeared in the last two games, particularly today. And they just didn't have anything.
I can't remember which pod I listened to this week that they were talking about it, but they basically said coaching in the finals, you try and take away, you can't take away everything, but you try and take away their best stuff and make them beat you with the next level stuff. And if you can't be innovative with that next level stuff, then you're screwed. You know, because all the teams at this stage are good enough to take away your best stuff. But what can you do next? What can you come up with next? And if you can't come up with anything next, you're fucked, is essentially it.
And so, what you saw in today's game was that neither team particularly shot threes particularly well. Mm. But the Spurs completely murdered Houston in the mid-range. They scored shitloads of mid-range twos. And that's exactly the one thing the Rockets don't want to do, go out of their way to not do. And that became the deciding thing in the game. The rim was protected. The perimeter was protected. It came down to who landed their mid-range shots. And congratulations, you've managed to find out a way to play that means you can't hit mid-range shots.
Yeah. Just another. And the other amazing thing about that Popovich record in, you know, how many coaches in the league even qualify for that stat? Being in that many second-round series, there wouldn't be another coach in the league, would there, that would even qualify for it?
Would the having beaten all the Western Conference teams stat, or the being 13-5?
Well, 13 like who's been in 18 final series in the league? No,
well, who's been a coach for 20 years. Let's face it. That basically tells you that he's been two and two going into game five pretty much once a year at least for the last 20 years.
It's just fucking amazing.
It is pretty amazing. But I mean, really, the whole series and the whole Rocks season has basically come down to a flowchart that said, did the Rocks manage to shoot threes and land them? Yes, they win by 20. No, they lose. And that's basically what we saw.
I still think, though, that they've overachieved for the year. Like, who had the more disappointing season, them or the Clippers? Fucking the Clippers by a huge margin.
Yeah, but the Clippers had massive injuries to their big stars. And you can put that in big stars and scare quotes if you like. But, I mean, the Clippers, and you can say yet again they're mulled by injury and maybe they should not have injured stars. Maybe they shouldn't have stars that are injured all the time. Maybe they should look at their medical staff, whatever. But the fact is that they were never full strength, in the same way that Utah were never full strength for most of the season. And even in the postseason, Utah weren't full strength. Utah's postseason and the Clippers' postseason were both a microcosm of the seasons they had.
I found it very interesting that the Lakers fired their strength and conditioning and medical staff last week, because the Lakers have famously have sort of famously been
behind the curve.
Slow to adopt modern techniques, shall we say. And you look at some of their guys, because I listened to that Rob Mahoney one about Randall and his injury recovery, and I was just found that fascinating. And I thought, I wonder whether,
if they mishandled Randall.
Maybe not that, but I wonder whether Walton's come across from Golden State and gone, geez, you guys are a little bit, you're sort of 5 or 6 years behind the fucking trends here, boys. Let's pick it up, because let's face it, you can't afford to be 3% behind on anything in the NBA at the moment. You know, if all things are being equal, you've got to fucking be across D-League development. You know, you've got to be able to pull, like, one of the things that people were saying with the Rockets is they played a 7-man rotation in that overtime game, and they were a bit tired for this game. Well, Pop's got Jonathan Simmons, which is a D-League reclamation. They've got Danny Green, who was basically washed out of the league when they find these guys that are not high salary, but who will come up time and time again and give them valuable minutes in a finals game that might just be enough to push you over the edge.
Yeah, like, the Rockets did have back end of the bench injuries, though. They only just got Sam Decker back. So the guys who would do that eighth and ninth man in the rotation were injured, and they had to waive and trade some in order to get Lou Williams across. Lou wasn't as good in the postseason as, or at least in this series,
as he was the before. But that's what I think about the Rocks. I don't think that's a finished side. I think this is the first year of finding out what they want to be.
First year under D'Antoni. Imagine how many fucking threes they're going to take next year. It's a real shame that the year ended on such a pathetic, deflating whoopee cushion of a result. And cue all the narrative about Harden, all the shit they used to say about LeBron and all that sort of stuff about him choking in the playoffs and, blah, 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 which is all bullshit talk radio narrative.
The West is fucking hard.
Yeah.
I wonder.
The West is fucking hard to the edge of most of these fucking statements.
I wonder whether Morey will go, we need to go and get a LaMarcus Aldridge. We need to go and find someone who can score in the mid-range when going gets tough.
I think they need to step back from the mid-range is poison idea. James Harden James Harden should go and get a mid-range game. Larry DeRozan style, because those guys can. I mean, if he's going to go, the problem was because they couldn't get that perimeter game working, Harden would just went into ISO mode. But his ISO mode involves waltzing right to the rim and hoping to get fouled. And the problem was that the Spurs were just not fouling him under any circumstance. He was just coughing the pill up. He was just kind of vomiting the ball, spewing the ball forward. And flailing his arms around like a fucking inflatable dude outside a fucking car yard. And it just wasn't working.
I watched the game. I think it was the game the Spurs lost. But they'd obviously trained or had practiced that we will not fucking put out. Like, there was like this invisible plane when Harden had the ball that the Spurs coaches obviously said, your hands do not cross this fucking plane.
Yeah.
Because Danny Green reached in for a foul in like the fourth possession of the game. Harden's fucking done that Durant rip move, got a foul, and he just got ripped. Green got pulled.
Yeah.
Obviously, yeah. Just like off you fucking go and like reamed him at the sideline. And then the assistant coach fucking sat him down and had a chat to him as well. And it was obviously a thing that, like, you're a senior player. We've said this. You can't fucking go gambling on that sort of.
Which is interesting because the game five was won on Manu gambling like fuck, burglaring the ball.
But the amazing thing with that is, right, and I'd completely forgotten about it, but he would have massive, like one of the biggest things that influenced his life was the fact that he fouled Nowitzki on exactly the same sort of play and lost them that series against the Mavs.
Yeah, I'd soft pedal that, you know, transforming his life considering all the stuff that he won before, during and since. I don't think that I don't think that keeps him up. No. How many rings did he win after that date? How many Olympic golds and Olympic medals did he win after that date? How many World Cups did he win after that date?
He did okay, but it did affect him quite a bit. I remember reading a story about Duncan having to really fucking, you know, coax him back to, bring him back up afterwards. I'm just saying that I know a lot of players who have made a mistake like that in a big series and swear never to even to attempt that sort of play again. Like if you get burned on a particular type of play, it's just like you will not go near. You can be fine in all other parts of your game, but you just do not go at that sort of thing late in games. And he just didn't even hesitate. It was just amazing.
It helped that was one of the worst final seconds positions I've ever seen. It was fucking
appalling. It's always been one of D'Antoni's big negatives is that he doesn't have that Brad Stevens like clockwork out of sight. You know, like Stevens has really, you know, you go here and you go here and everyone knows exactly what they're doing and because everyone knows what they're doing, you can get a little bit of separation. Or even something like Lillard hitting that big three where, you know, people are cutting and allowed Lillard to get free for that big three that against the Rockets.
Where was the off-ball motion? There was
Everyone was just standing around.
For that entire overtime and for most of the fourth quarter, there'd been no cutting off the ball. Yeah. Everyone had just been – it'd been the stand around and look at James Harden offense, which was, you know, put a fucking Lakers jersey on him. He's ready to go. He's Kobe. Mm. But it was fucking crap to watch, and it was – the result was crap as well because their shit just wasn't working.
And yet Manu making that block wasn't the most amazing thing in that overtime. The most amazing thing in that overtime was Danny Green driving to the rack like he was DeMar DeRozan and getting the end one. Like every time he fucking puts the ball on the ground, I hold my breath. He's just not that good a ball player.
You'd be better off with Anthony Mundine's mate, Danny Green.
Yeah.
Oh well, so that's definitely the most interesting series in the West.
After all that chat, do you think they take a game off Golden State?
No, not at all. Only if Mike Brown totally fucks something up, or Draymond kicks someone in the testicles again, which is always possible.
I could see Patty getting hot for a game and Kawhi going nuts and them taking one game.
I can't see Patty doing anything ever. You know he's. He's a perfectly serviceable backup. He didn't do anything that convinced me. I mean, if you're getting outplayed by Dylan Payne Murray and Danny Green, then you're a backup.
Oh, in that overtime game, he scored 20 points with.
Do you know why the game went to overtime, Bezo?
Why?
Because he fucked the last shot.
I don't know about
double
that.
Double pumped and didn't get the shot off before the bell went.
I think his much higher paid teammate fucked that play up, not him.
I think that's very, very ripe to blame Pau Gasol for having to wrestle in the key. There was plenty of space there if he wanted to trot in and get a little floater.
No. Popovich had called a high pick and roll. That was the play. He called a high pick and roll. Mills was waiting for him to come up. That's what he was waiting for. Because he came off and you can see it.
He fucked it.
I don't know. I just think the Spurs are a team that play the play. You know, if the play's called, you play the play. I don't think Mills is a freelance sort of guy. Like, you know, if it was Curry or Lillard. Or LeBron, sure, they're going to
remember that Lillard shot against the Rockets. That wasn't the play.
Yeah, yeah, but Mills is not even close to the conversation in that sort of player. But
no, that's why they ran him out of Portland.
Hey, there, I DM'd you a little
picture
question.
Of your cock, and I'm not interested. No,
yeah, sure.
Snail with a little trunk wig. It was really weird.
Who do you think the third best player is on the Cavs and the Warriors?
Kevin and Clay. I mean, it depends on who they're playing, but it's
not Draymond. Do you think Clay is a better player than Draymond?
Oh shit! I hadn't thought of Draymond.
Yeah, well, obviously, because, you know, Steph and Durant are the best two players on. Okay, my point is, right, I went through the sides in the rest of the league and went,
I don't know who the third best player is, yeah.
No, I went, if you put Kevin Love or Draymond Green on this side, are they the best player on this side? And there's a lot of fucking sides you could say yes to that.
Like, if you put
question.
Kevin Love on the Minnesota Timberwolves from a couple of years ago, oh, wait. No, they didn't actually amount to anything when you did that.
Oh, no, I'm not saying that they would amount to anything. I'm just saying, is Kevin Love better than Kemba Walker? Is Kevin Love better than...
Oh, that's hard to say, different sort of player.
But I guess what I'm trying to say is there's a...
At least compare it to kind of fat and useless white power forwards. At least make it a fair comp.
Well, okay, is Kevin Love better than Brook Lopez?
Brook Lopez is a center.
You're missing my point. What I'm trying to say is that the third and fourth best players...
Is he better
players,
than Kelly Olynyk?
Well,
and ripping people's arms off. Is Kelly Olynyk the reincarnation of Auntie Jack from the Wollongong show? Should we rename him Deli Olynyk, given the amount of hate he's getting at the moment?
I'll tell you what, it's hard to have sympathy for the Celtics, but Draymond was fucking making it... making a good case.
No, because fuck the Celtics.
Because him giving stick to the Celtics is pretty fucking rough when you've got four All-NBA players or five All-NBA players on your side and the Celtics have Isaiah Thomas and not much fucking
else. So you don't want Draymond to talk?
No, I love him talking. I just,
so shut up, let him talk. If he talks, you're going to get all the shit. It's like our podcast. You're going to get all our shit takes as well as our good ones. I want Draymond to just keep talking because he's entertaining. I want Ball to keep talking because he's entertaining. Half of the stuff he says is total shit, but I'm interested to find out what he has to say and what the reaction to what he's going to say is going to be.
I really, really want Ball to go to the New York Knicks. Him versus the Knicks. Like, him and the New York Knicks media will just be fucking hilarious.
Look, I think as soon as Lonzo's in the league, the focus will turn to the younger blokes who probably need more boosting to get them, mm-hmm. and also to build
into
the brand and all that sort of stuff. So, I mean, whose parents have you seen hanging around NBA teams interfering with team selection?
Oh, I don't think he'll do that. I just think that, like, Phil and the coaching staffs aren't exactly popular. And if you need a quote, here's this guy who's quite happy to talk. He'll talk.
Yeah, but it's not going to make the media circus any larger.
No, that's
because the media circus is already as large as it, you know, it expands to fit the size of the space.
Mm.
Like a man spreading dude in a suit on a train. So yeah. I mean the Dubs. We should briefly touch on the Dubs Utah series. I mean, Utah hung in. For most of the games, they hung in within 10 points for three quarters, but they never really looked like actually getting close enough. So, poor little out for them. Dante played well in the fourth game.
Yeah, see, I find...
A couple of quarters.
I find George Hill Wright is constantly fucking injured. Constantly fucking.
Constantly injured. And we talked about this last week when I threw out altitude as a potential thing because of, you know, lower air pressure. But that was just a facetious thing. But they do have, all of their dudes were injured at some point of the season. Every single fucking one of them.
I just would not be paying George Hill the max when I've got, like, you've got to make a leap.
You know who
to,
might
to get
him?
It. To, oh, the Spurs?
You
I don't think they'll
Antonio
pay him the max.
Spurs will pay him.
They will not pay. If he goes there, it won't be.
Him well. I don't think George Hill
will he won't go there for the max. So I could see him going back there, but there's no way they pay him the max.
I don't think he's going to get the max.
I think he will, mate. Like, there's a heap of sides out there that fucking want a point guard.
Are they? I'm not so sure that there's that many teams that are a point guard away and are going to put the money hand in their pocket.
Yeah.
Because I think there's a bit of understanding from last season that, sure, you've got the money and you might as well spend the money, but if you do, it does affect your behavior in about 2 to 3 years down the track. It's not consequence-free giving huge money to Evan Turner or various other things that Portland did. It does have a consequence down the road.
There's always stupid GMs out there, mate. The Kings don't have a point guard.
Kings don't have a GM either. Maybe they can trade for one of them.
That's right.
Maybe the Vlade can be traded again. That's how he got there in the first place.
Maybe they should try and trade 6 first-round picks for RC Buford. That'll probably be the best trade they ever make. Though it would be funny watching Vlade overrule him in the room when they make the pick.
Vivek.
In the war room.
4-on-5, man.
Oh, dear. Look, I hope that something gets thrown up in the conference finals that makes it interesting, but I just think we're waiting for the finals now, aren't we, to see.
No, we're not even waiting for that because I know I was watching some very experienced, intelligent NBA writers just lose their shit on Twitter with the whole existential pointlessness of every game from now on. And I thought, enjoy these last two competitive games of the year. Today's game, which was a blowout. But in theory, it was a competitive series. And tomorrow, which will be done by the time you hear this, folks, probably, unless we get this up early tomorrow, which is the game 6 in the Wizards-Celtics game, although all the games have been won by the home team and usually fairly comfortably, I would think the Celtics have... You never quite know, but I think the Celtics will probably do a Spurs on the Wizards, and that'll be that. And then they'll go and get absolutely fucking annihilated by the Cavs because the Cavs are the Eastern Conference Warriors. Yeah. Unfortunately for the Cavs, the Warriors are the Western Conference Warriors and the actual Warriors, and that will be the end of that.
Well, it's almost like who can get through the next round without losing a player or injury? That's probably the more important thing than any...
Or even banging someone up a little bit and having someone carrying a twinge or a...
Yeah,
because does
Durant bang his knee, or does Kyrie break a hand,
there was some talk that Harden had banged his head in one of the earlier games, and he'd never been quite the same. You know, he was carrying a concussion, and I don't know about that, but I was checking through my notes, and I did notice that I'd written down that Harden had banged his knee, and I'd actually written that looks a bit MCL-y, ACL-y. Well, And he shook it off and he played on, but you know these knocks can affect your mobility and your torsional strength and all that sort of stuff. If you're trying to finish through traffic, it's going to make an impact. So you don't even have to be out of a game to have your.
At this level, like every little bit matters. The thing that I was impressed with the Rockets, and I was really impressed with Harden, is like he got asked that, you know, are you banged up? Are you carrying an injury? Are you trying to play through something? And he said, nope, nothing. I'm fine. It's absolutely on me. I played like shit. I didn't carry the team to where I needed to be. If we're going to succeed, I've got to be better. Like, I don't know whether the Harden of 2 years ago would have said that. I think he would have just gone, maybe I'm a bit banged up. I don't know. It just felt like...
Yeah, but it's not going to come from him. And I reckon, there's definitely something wasn't right. And I felt like it was more just that A, he wasn't getting the fouls. B, he was probably fairly buggered from carrying the team. I know that he played a lot of games, but so did LeBron. And Patty Mills didn't play any games, and he looked shit out.
I think you're a bit harsh on Patty. The game I watched, the finals game I watched, he looked pretty fucking...
How many games did you watch?
I watched three of this series.
To shoot the ball in game 5.
Okay. There's lots of very, very good players that have made mistakes at least as bad as that one. So, okay. It's not a great play. I still think he played pretty good, and I still think he's going to get paid next year. So
no, he'll stay at the Spurs and not get paid.
Well, he might get paid more, but man, that'd be a smart look. The thing with him,
he's not
going to
get Joe Ingles paid.
Probably not. No, but look, he could stay at the Spurs and be Manu 2.0 quite easily. And have a really long career and probably make more money over the length of his career.
Well,
if he goes to a crappy team and starts and doesn't do that well, he could wash out of the league in 2 or 3 years. I think he would be smart to stay there, but you know, sometimes you got to take the big money when you can. So
yeah, I mean, if someone can offer you twice as much money to do your job for a shit company.
And
you got bills.
Cool. Well, and they're all competitive guys. Like maybe he wants to see whether he like the thing with being a starting point guard is you sort of have to do it for a season to really get the reps. Like you got to get the reps of doing it before you can actually, you know whether you're good at it or not.
Yeah,
like he's never been anyone but a bench player. So
yeah, and he's really become he's been a bit like a Origin utility player. He's become a hybrid guard. You know, he's been playing one or two guard or both, and they'd played plenty of. You know, they had him on the floor with Murray. They had him on the floor with Manu. Had him on. You know, they had lots of different combinations, and it's not as though they've given him a run at the one, thinking that's what he is. So, and maybe that's not what he is at all anymore. I mean,
And
maybe none of this matters anymore. I mean, in the era of James Harden and Russell Westbrook, what the fuck's a point guard? And what the fuck's a two guard? And is it just small dude who shoots versus large dude who gets rebounds?
The Bleacher Report Game of Zones episode 3 had a little thing with D'Antoni being like the mad librarian. And he like looks at James Harden's beard with a magnifying glass and goes, yes, point guard. And James Harden looks up the library and there's all these books on like pick and rolls and all different types of offense all through the ages. And he's like, wow, your other library on defense must be just as big. And D'Antoni's like, defense? No, this is my only library. This is all I've got. And Harden just like starts crying tears of joy. And that sort of sums up, you know, how well they are matched, though, in terms of their philosophy on basketball, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose. But, I mean, putting today's game aside, the Rockets' problem hasn't been defense.
No, their problem has probably been their flexibility in offense. And
their one-size-fits-all bomb threes. And get free throws approach, and that's like I think they got a bit kind of fat on that because there was a lot of gain to be made in that. There was a lot of fat in that, and that they won a lot of games on the basis of that, and they got a bit too dependent on it.
Look, remember when Dallas schooled Miami in the finals, and everyone sort of said to you know LeBron's going to get these post op opportunities because of mismatches, and if he can't score in the post, then you know, that's somewhere you can exploit his teams. And that summer, he went away and went and saw some power forwards and worked on his post game and all of a sudden became really effective in the post. And because he's just an amazing passer, if you double him in the post, it's just like slitting your fucking wrists.
And hated every moment and was planning his exit from the club for the moment Pat Riley told him he had to do that.
Yeah, but it did make him a
couple of rings.
Yeah, and it made him a more well-rounded player, and that's what I wonder about Harden. Is he going to go away this off-season and go, okay, I need to find something else in my game. I need to work on something different so that when I get thrown this challenge again, I can cop it. And who knows, does he just keep going down the same path or do they add another wrinkle to their game? And that'll be the interesting thing to see with them next year.
Yeah, I reckon Harden, when he's finished staring at the ceiling, at 3 o'clock in the morning is going to think mid range. He's going to think, okay, if I'm going to do that, I can't just try and drive and finish at the rim. I've got to work on it. You know, I've got to work harder on my floater. I've got to work harder on those sorts of options because I'm not going to get this shit you know, they're not going to give me the calls I mean, you can have it's a fucking cliche, but playoff basketball is different. It's a different sport. It's officiated more differently. The adjustments come thick and fast. The offenses that you used in the regular season don't work. You know, the shit that worked on a fucking wet Tuesday in November in Sacramento will not work in game six against San Antonio. Against Popovich. They fucking won't. Yeah. They just won't.
Hey, I asked the question. You said save it for the podcast. Who is the Tottenham Hotspurs? And
no,
explain.
I haven't finished.
Okay, sorry.
NBA content. Don't interrupt my NBA content.
No. I wanted to know who the Tottenham of the NBA was.
Well, it's the Spurs of the Spurs.
Mm.
So what this came up from was some people, including yourself, saying, you know, it would be so Spursy if the Spurs won without Kawhi. It'd be so Spursy. In the context that I'm more familiar with, out of English Premier League football, things that are so Spursy have a completely different connotation. What they mean is failing at the final hurdle. They mean going into...
Well, that's not the Clips. That's not the Clips then, because they never get to the final.
No, and they mean failing heroically. So it's certainly not the Clippers. It's a team that sort of gets close and then just fucks it in the last minute. Conceded, you know, losing it in the end of the game. So it might be, and actually probably the Clippers are the best comp.
Mm.
Although the Clippers have long been put forward as a team that should be winning everything, whereas the Spurs are more sort of plucky up-and-comers.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the Rockets have never, like, they've made...
And we'll get to what so Spursy means in the Premier League a little bit later on when we get to that side of the ball.
Hashtag. The Rockets have had... like teams that have overachieved but have never gone past the conference finals quite a bit in the last decade too. Because they've had that, you know, they had the Tracy McGrady and the Yao teams, and they made the conference finals with one of those sides, didn't they? Got beaten by the Lakers. And they made the conference finals when they beat the Clippers. But they've never really just pushed over that last boundary.
Yeah, they haven't made a final series.
Mm. Well, you know, a little bit sunsy, like the Suns have been that way, made three conference finals but never a finals. So,
yes.
Mm.
Now,
right.
Now they have the same problem.
Yeah, funny.
We have one plan on offense. No, that's not entirely fair, but they definitely had a plan A, capital letters, bold print, 24-point font, and the plan B was sort of in subscript.
Mm.
That was sort of the problem. What else?
So how is the Premier League going?
I had a bit more NBA content, but we'll set that aside. I was just going to say, I'm sick of everyone like complaining. Oh, it's just the Cavs versus the Dubs. It's so inevitable. How can people live like this? What's the point?
And the Cavs versus the Dubs is going to be awesome. Can LeBron beat a better side? Now, what's not to like about that?
Team of champions versus champion team. Team of champion and friends versus champion team. And also, were any of these people around in the 80s when there were literally only two teams in the entire fucking NBA and a bunch of scrubs? And it was supposedly the fucking golden era of the National Basketball Association when it was Magic versus fucking the legend Larry.
Didn't we have Celtics-Lakers 3 years in a row? No one complained about
Keep
that.
Counting. More than
no,
three
no,
years.
No, recently, yeah, the Kobe, absolutely. Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett.
Well, although the competition to get there was a little bit higher.
Yeah.
But
we still had the same finals
Celtics,
for fucking
Lakers
3 years in a row.
Was all there was in the 80s. I mean, there was a little bit of Sixers at the start and the Pistons turned up at the end, but that's all there fucking was. You know, all you need is two teams for a rivalry.
Mm.
It's all right if the rest of it is just subtext and building up and scene setting paragraphs.
Like, and the thing is too, you've got one side that sort of exists because of a weird twist in the cap negotiations. Like, it's really esoteric, and most NBA fans wouldn't understand
it. Is that
it,
a word?
Esoteric? I'm sure that's a word.
It is, if you spell it esoteric.
Esoteric? Oh, yeah.
You know how you say you don't have the words to talk about music?
Yes.
You don't have the words to talk about sport either.
Look, I've always had the vocabulary, just not the pronunciation.
Is it Bliss and Esoteric?
Bliss and Esoteric, yes. That's
it's a free album title for them if they want to use it. Maybe they can take it and fuck off.
Yeah, every time I see those guys, I'm not that keen. But anyway, I'm excited for these two teams. I really am. I want to see whether LeBron can just monster his way, like, through another improbable victory. I want to see what – I actually think Steph Curry is due for a big final series. I reckon he's been saving himself
up. I don't think he needs to be. I don't think he needs to save himself for a big final series. He's less important in this sort of thing than Durant is, because, as we said before, playoff basketball is a different animal to regular season basketball. In playoff basketball, that high leverage, go get us a bucket, ugly ISO mid-range bullshit is much more important than it is in the regular season, because you have these high leverage circumstances where all the pretty basketball becomes impossible because it's all been schemed out. All the countermeasures have been deployed to stop you doing all that lovely rattling it around the perimeter and finding space and doing spot-up threes. So it really comes down to who can kind of wrestle their way into the mid-range and do a nasty floater. Sounds a bit Bondi Beach.
I was going to say it sounds like my kid's habits. But yeah, anyway.
It was bath time about 2 hours ago. I think Durant is the guy for that. So I think Durant's going to be proportionally more important to the Warriors' success than Curry will be, because you can. I think that you can find a way to stop Curry more effectively, even though that's probably not quite fair. But Curry on a bad day can't find something else to do. Whereas Durant can probably kind of wrestle his way through it, I think, a bit more effectively.
Well, I think the thing is, when their machine's going, Durant is fucking scary effective. And
well, he doesn't even need the machine to be scary effective.
Well, that's what I mean. That's what I mean. Like, when the machine breaks down and they take away everything else, you still got Durant as this monster one-on-one scorer.
Well, there was one game against Utah when they cut. I'd flip channels. They came back from break and they had, like, you know, Draymond had like 3 points and Steph had like 5 points and Clay had fuck all. And I thought, oh, wow, the double must be going bad. And, of course, the scores were equal because Durant had got 100.
He had 32 or something.
Yeah, exactly right. Because when everything else is going bad, give it to Captain ISO. He'll sort it out for you.
Mm.
We'll get your buckets.
I would be fascinated to
see Steph. In the same way that LeBron has been getting buckets. I mean, that Toronto series, which we should talk about. We haven't really talked about the East very much, probably because I think we know the East are going to lose to the West. But LeBron has been scoring ridiculous numbers. I mean, he was averaging 30, in the 30s in this series against to the point where DeMar DeRozan was very obviously inferring that he was on the Stephen Dank gear by saying, I can't believe LeBron, after all these seasons, having played all these games, is even more dynamic than he ever was before. Hint, hint, Miami anti-aging clinics.
Look, he might be, but everything I've heard about him is he is just, like, you know, Steve Nash got more out of himself. Like, Steve Nash was never the most talented player, and he got sort of more out of himself by, you know, diet and physical regime and working out and yoga and stretching. And as far as I know, LeBron is like one of the most talented players to ever come through the league. And he also fucking looks after himself like that. And, you know, if you've got someone that's willing to do that, then you're going to have an advantage over every other fucking player. So,
yeah, I have to say, and it's probably been very evident to anybody who's followed this podcast for a while, but I ride for LeBron. I really like the dude. And always have, always supported him, even when he did stupid things like we're all supposed to hate him after the decision. I got off the hate much quicker than a lot of people, I think. And I think we're going to look back on the way that he was pilloried for not being Michael Jordan for most of the early part of his career as a real shame, because he was and is a fucking amazing basketball player. And when he goes, there's going to be a fucking huge hole. There's going to be other stars, but he is a talent the likes of which I'm not going to say we'll never see again, because we will see someone like that again, but we were lucky to see him.
Well, just coming back to Draymond for a second, there was a really interesting article by, I think it was by Lee Jenkins again, about how Draymond's the poster boy for being the underappreciated part of the machine. How he can go out, like, he's a star, but he's a star.
He aims for that, though. That's his.
Yeah, that's.
That'd be that's his branded tagline.
Well, he's a little bit like the Rodman of his age, but the good thing is that he's a star with that sort of attitude. So the thing is that if you're a grinder as a 14 or a 15 year old, if you're not a pure shooter like Steph Curry, or you're not the best player in the fucking world like Durant, like, you've got a role model. Here's this guy who's fucking shorter than everyone, doesn't fucking shoot the ball a lot, but is just such an integral part of one of the best teams in basketball.
But how are you going to get noticed in the AAU and college systems, though? That's the kind of the problem is that, yeah, sure, you've got a role model, and you know what you're good at, and you will be needed when it comes to professional basketball. But you've got a long path before you get to there, and you might not be found.
Well, this is the thing I think about the D-League, right? How the D-League or the G-League or whatever it's fucking called now, like, it's basically... I think there's only two teams that don't have an affiliate now, but I think what they're really trying to do is they understand that not every player is going to come out of college, even 2 or 3 years of college, or even that the college experience is going to be the best way they develop. Like, some players need shitloads of coaching and lots of reps, and you don't get that in college because they're not allowed to train that much. They're just not. It's the rules.
And that sort of basketball doesn't win you gun, you know, that sort of player isn't,
So I think there's a whole heap of Jonathan Simmons and Danny Greens kicking around that are just fucking washing out of the sport. And I think smart teams like the Cavs and the Spurs and Utah will find those guys and develop them up to maybe the 7th or 8th player on the roster. But hey, the Rockets just proved that sometimes it's the 7th or 8th player that makes the difference between losing a game in overtime and winning a game in overtime. So,
well, this is something I've always noticed in European football, is that, you know, high value players aren't necessarily high value because they're so much better than everyone else. It's just that they happen to be worth that amount of money at a given moment in the market. It's like Jalen Rose says, you don't get paid what you deserve. You get paid what you have the leverage to negotiate. Or what your agent has the leverage to negotiate. Paul Pogba is the most expensive footballer in the world right now. His performances for Man United have not backed that up at all. It's just that he happened to be there happened to be a confluence of market circumstances whereby Man United were willing to pay that huge, inordinate amount of money, including $40 million to his agent, horrendous amounts of money, enough money to run League Two for a year. But,
well, it sucks to be a fucking center in the NBA next year, because there's like a million fucking centers. No one can trade them.
Nobody needs them. Well, there'll be a bounce back from the Maury Bull. Because maybe, I mean, in the playoffs at least, you do need a center. But the loss of Nene was sneakily a big thing for the Rockets, because they lost the big man, they lost rim protection, they lost a bit of finishing at the rim.
Yeah, but once upon a time, every team had four big guys, four power forward / centers, and now most teams carry two, and you lose one, you're fucked. Like, the Spurs were laughed at for signing Pau Gasol, because it's like, why do you need three big guys? You've already got, you've got Aldridge, you've got Deadman, why do you need another big guy? Worked out okay for them, but...
Deadman was before the start of the season. let's get real.
Yeah, but I know what you're saying about the football thing. It's like, if you're a scarce resource, you might not be the best player in the world, but if you're a resource six teams need at a particular time, you're going to get paid because they're all going to fucking bid on you.
But more to say that the difference between your $100 million midfielder and $1 million midfielder is not actually that great in terms of physical skill.
You're not getting a hundred times the player.
You're not. I mean, you might have dudes who've got ridiculous individual talent, like a Alexis Sanchez or a Cristiano Ronaldo, but by and large, you're not getting. There's not that much difference. That's why a team like a well-drilled, well-organized international team like Iceland can beat a team like England in the European Championships. I know club and country football, you know, international football is slightly different. That's why a team like Leicester, who were put together for $2.50 in a Pizza Hut coupon, could go and win the fucking league last year. Because the difference, it was just that their value hadn't been realized yet. They hadn't, no one had paid the big transfer fee for N'Golo Kante or Jamie Vardy or Riyad Mahrez yet. They were still on just promoted team kind of value. But as players, they're probably as good as dudes who are on the big coin at Arsenal or on the big coin at Chelsea. And in fact, N'Golo Kante went to Chelsea and is now on huge coin and won a, and did the Mark Schwarzer trick of winning, winning two in a row. Although Mark Schwarzer managged to win two in a row for two different clubs without playing a game, which I thought was bloody tremendous.
That's pretty impressive.
Whereas Brad Guzan of Middlesbrough managed to get relegated twice in 2 years because he was on Aston Villa's side as the goalkeeper, got relegated, got transferred to Middlesbrough, was the goalkeeper at Middlesbrough, who only just got relegated this year as well. So he's the anti-Mark
Easy. Well, there's got to be balance in the universe.
Yes, there does.
So Chelsea have wrapped up that pretty easily.
So what? No, it's not done yet. There's not a fork hanging out of it. But it was interesting because this time last year, give or take a week or so, Spurs were chasing Leicester. They needed to win. They were hosting. They went to Chelsea. And they needed a win to keep up, to not fall out of mathematical possibility of winning the league. And they were up 2-0 at Chelsea. And then Chelsea got two late goals. And the game degenerated into a fucking scramble and a mess and a stoush. And people with it, you know, it was like a kind of a quasi brawl at full time. It was called the Battle of Stamford Bridge. So basically, this time last year, Chelsea beat Spurs to guarantee Leicester the title. And this year, West Ham beat Spurs to basically guarantee Chelsea the title. So what that tells me is that my club, West Ham, are going to win the title next year.
Happy days.
Yeah. Actually, they've been a lot better since Winston Reid came back. They've actually been playing some good defense. But Spurs are safe in second, but it is very Spursy to, you know, play brilliant football and then lose to 1-0 to West Ham, who have been shit-ass all year. It's very Spursy to be 2-0 up at Chelsea last year and then ship two goals in the last 10 minutes and completely lose your bottle and have two of your players sent off and have a brawl and chuck your toys and all the rest of it. That's very Spursy in the Premier League context.
So Champions League final is decided?
Champions League will be Juventus and Real Madrid, which is the repeat of the 98 Champions League final, which is the first one I can remember watching live. I was barracking for not Juventus because being an AC Milan fan, I probably have to barrack for Juventus because they're Italian and Real Madrid are Franco's team and fuck Franco. But the Champions League places in England have been tied up basically. It looks like being Leicester and Man City, although Arsenal and Man United are technically in the frame. Man United kind of punted the rest of the Premier League season. Mourinho rested a few players for the game against Arsenal, which Arsenal won 2-0. It was the first time Arsene Wenger has ever beaten Jose Mourinho in the Premier League, which is remarkable given their relationship.
Ever.
Who knew? I think Mourinho was hashtag Wenger in just because he wants to keep him around to torture him more in future years.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Because, I mean,
because those two guys have played, would have played a lot of games between.
Mourinho came into his first go around with Chelsea was 2005.
Oh, yeah. And the fact that it's not just the Premier League, there's FA Cup and a whole heap of other stuff.
And Mourinho has gone out of his way to antagonise Wenger his entire career. I mean, he has sledged him relentlessly. He's in press conferences, he called him a specialist in failure. You know, he's talked about other managers who haven't won anything for 20 years, when in reality the last time Arsenal won something was a lot more recent than that. You know, he's constantly bagged him. And the fact that he didn't run dead in this game the other week, the weekend, but certainly rested a few players because they're trying to get into the Champions League. I think they've figured out their best chance to get into the Champions League is actually to win the Europa League. So they've made the final of the Europa League where they'll play Ajax. That'll be in a few weeks. I think, and if you win that, you get into the Champions League. I think they've figured out that's their best path in. They've got more chance of doing that than overtaking Arsenal and City and Liverpool and so forth.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Just lost you for a second.
The podcast.
I'm
still here. Shouts to Sydney FC for winning. Did you have... Which is just as well.
Because no one likes fucking Melbourne.
No one likes Melbourne. But the thing is also they won the home and away by like a million points. So if they'd lost, that would have just been bullshit. You know? It's sort of... And
I see a growing... sort of growing number of people that want to introduce the English football style of winning
without playoffs.
To to football in Australia.
And like before on the podcast, I mean, you're comfortable with the culture of having a grand final, having a Super Bowl. England have that too, but it's called the FA Cup final, and there is an FFA Cup for that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And to be fair, if they'd just been first past the post on points, the season would have finished 10 weeks ago. So, yeah. But having said that, maybe the season should have finished 10 weeks ago, so they wouldn't have had to play on pitches that look like the fucking surface of the moon and all the face of a Pizza Hut delivery driver who's just turned 15. That was the worst. I mean, this is the thing. You're trying to say, okay, now we want to have a big spectacle, a big final that we can televise around the world.
Mm.
Fucking golf ball surface pitch. It was a horrible game of football. Both teams were constipated massively by fear and by incompetence. It was in no way a fucking showcase for anything other than things that Peter Fitzsimons can bar up about in terms of things that are shit about soccer.
I think what they would have to do if they wanted to go to that model is they would have to really push the FA Cup, the FFA Cup a lot more, like make it a much bigger thing. I actually like the league model, FA Cup model. I like that. I love the romance of little clubs being pitted against big clubs and having that whole thing.
I've tried to do that with the FFA Cup in that you've got these. I mean, every club in Australia can. I mean, there's regional clubs and clubs from the names you've forgotten who used to be in the NSL pop up, and it's actually kind of cool. That part of it's really quite cool, but it is a little bit. I mean, it's a bit Mickey Mouse, but it's new. You know, it's relatively new. They're still figuring it out.
Yeah, but you have to start somewhere. This is a bit like women's AFL. It's like, well, it's low scoring. It's like, yeah, it's the first fucking year it's been a professional sport. Give it a little bit of time to breathe.
Yeah.
Give clubs a chance to develop, to do player development and coaching and stuff like that. Like,
it won't be recognisable in 3 years' time. Compared, I mean, if you show footage of the first season to people playing in the third season, they'll be like, my God, is that what we were doing? It'll be transformed. It'll be ridiculous. It'll be completely different.
When I took over Eagles, when I started coaching my club side, like they were all these young guys that had come up with this sort of chip on our shoulder attitude, and because they were never going to make finals, they were just always angry at everyone, angry at the refs, angry at other players. They just wanted to fight everyone all the time. And look, when you first get into a competition, that's a great attitude to have because you've just got to survive. But when you actually want to move past that to play play finals and actually achieve more, you've got to be disciplined enough to not give the ball away every fucking second time you touch it. But that took me two whole fucking seasons to get that out of them. Two whole fucking seasons. So,
jeez, you're a bad coach.
How can you expect... You know, like, how can you expect something to succeed in fucking two seasons? That's one team. Imagine trying to run a whole concept like the FFA Cup and have it succeed in one go. It's going to take a decade for that to become a tradition and for, you know, you're going to need a Brisbane Strikers or someone like that to make a really deep finals run.
Yeah, and you need to have people earmarking the calendar and all that sort of stuff. Absolutely. Yeah. You're absolutely right with that. Speaking of the A-League, just to wrap up that part, is to say that former Melbourne City and briefly, well, he's a Phoenix coach, Ernie Merrick, has popped up at the Newcastle Jets. He's the new coach of the Jets, who needed a new coach because they fired their coach on the eve of last season and played shit for the entire year, so they needed a coach. They got Ernie Merrick, who's well-credentialed, even though he wasn't great with the Knicks. I mentioned this mainly because the day Ernie Merrick quit, an hour later, the Prime Minister resigned. So what we can hope is that Ernie Merrick will quit the Newcastle job really soon, because that will get rid of your oily turd of a minister. Yeah.
The problem is that they'll probably elect a potato in his place.
Just replace him with a potato or an onion. Great choices you've got. All the vegetables that you know,
I'm sure our few American listeners are going to completely across that little joke there. But anyway,
speaking of fuckedness in management, your friend Pat Howard got renewed till 2019 in the Australian cricket.
Yeah, that's
quotes high performance manager.
That's easy because evidently he was looking at going back to Australian rugby. Watched 5 minutes of a super fucking rugby game and went, "I'm staying with cricket, thanks."
So shouts to him and shouts to the Peter Principal, which is the only reason he's got a job.
He might have a lot harder job than people think because Adam Collins just tweeted out tonight that the Australian Cricketers Association and Cricket Australia have been now going to industrial mediation, so that's going well.
Pay the boys, you fucking cheap pricks, and the girls.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Froome got hit by a car. Well, sort of. He got run off the road. He got run onto the footpath and then chased along the footpath by a car when he was out training in France, which is a bit inconvenient, and you'd think a multiple Tour de France winner wouldn't get that kind of behaviour, but then again, it's Chris Froome. he did not get run over by, or did not get thrown under the bus by the Sky doping investigation, which is nice. We shouldn't joke of course, Michele Scarponi, the former Giro winner, got hit by a truck a few weeks ago and killed, and that was very sad. But we can joke about the dude at the Giro who miscounted the number of laps to go
saw that.
On the little criteria around Messina. And gave it the big hands in the air and hand over your keys. And I still haven't worked out whether he did that for shits and gigs or whether he actually genuinely didn't know what the bell sound was that meant one lap to go.
But he finished 165th.
Yeah, but everyone finishes 160th in a bunch. You know, if you're in a bunch and you're in a bunch sprint and you're not sprinting, you finish 100 and fuck off. That's how it works. He was ST. He was same time as everybody else.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
Yep. Louis the Lip Richards dropped off the twig.
Mm.
The former Collingwood great, who I would say I primarily remember as being Maxie Walker's foil on Whitewater Sports on a Saturday afternoon when I was growing up.
Yeah, because he was AFL, you know, all the way through.
Yeah, I never saw him play. I never would have seen him.
Oh, and I never even heard him commentate or comment on AFL. Like, you know, my introduction to AFL was long after he had retired.
Also, I just mentioned that because, of course, we lost Max Walker last year and somehow Ian Chappell is still going. I'm presuming he eats the souls of some of cricketers that he sledges. So that's... That's the week in sport with the sport. Bulls podcast.
It wasn't a bad week. I enjoyed the Spurs Rocket series. Yeah. Wizards Celtics not so much, but Spurs Rockets has been interesting.
That's the problem. You look at the series and go, "Oh, they're close." And you look at the scores and go, "Oh, no, they're not close, are they?" I mean, there is the and I think it. I mean, really, just to wrap up on basketball, I think it's just the fact that because 3-pointers matter more in the offense. You can be out by a lot more than you used to be out by. you know, if your shooting was a bit out in the two-point era, then you wouldn't lose by quite so much.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is, role players play better at home, and role players hitting big threes because the defense is loading up on your primary players is a much bigger thing. So it's not really that surprising. But, you know, and all it needs is one good role player to have a good game away, like LaMarcus Aldridge, and you're fine. Oh, dear. That's a bit rough. But anyway. All right, Doc.
You meant to say Patty Mills.
Shall we come back? He's a starter, mate. He's not a role player. And talk some tunes.
He started one game, but he didn't start it. He won't start another one.
See ya.